Hi, everyone. My name is Joachim, and I'm a drug addict. I really, really hope I can get something out on English. Is not my native language, and it's kind of weird to make a speech on it. I actually have my sponsor is from the United States, and he tells me often that my English is good, and I think actually he's lying. He's not interested in what I'm saying, and it doesn't matter if he gets me. The point is that I get what he tells me. I'm going to share a short version of my own story, and then I'm going to talk about DAA and how it comes about and so on. I come from a family where drug addiction is common. A lot of members of my family is dead in this disease. At the age of 8, I was very young. I found my first drug of choice, or whatever you call it, and that was sniffing. I used the term sniffing glue, but it wasn't actually glue. There is a lot of better stuff you can sniff than glue, I wouldn't call sniffing glue. You know, there are classes amongst our drug addicts also, you know, and I don't think sniffers are the upper class of drug addicts somehow. So you can say when it comes to drugs, I started at the bottom and mainly stayed there. I come across alcohol at the age of 10, 11, and I was becoming a really heavy alcoholic at once. I think I'm born with this allergic reaction in my body. I think some has to work for it. I was given it as a gift, I guess. At the age of 13, 14, I found amphetamines, which is the most common drugs for drug addicts. I would guess 80% of the drug addicts in Sweden are injecting amphetamines, different kinds of amphetamines, methamphetamines, and it's almost only injectable versions of it. And that's where I started, and that's what I did until age of 27. My teenage life was more or less in custody by the police and youth jails, and I know the story about that. The last 3 or 4 years, I heard some of the earlier speakers talk about hopelessness, and I really hope I can get this through, and it makes sense to explain my last year and what this was about. My normal weight was 39 kilos. I'm 180, and I looked like I had just been released from Auschwitz. I was paranoid, totally bananas to be. I was a danger to myself and all the people I met. Not that I'm a very violent person, but I was scared. And that was my last years was only fear, guilt, and you know, everything. I read something about the term hopelessness some years ago. And to me, it's like a picture of who I was just before I found this program. And it was a doctor that made experiment with dogs. And he had a cage where he put dogs. Some of you maybe heard it, but it's a really good picture of what hopelessness really is and what this disease can make to a person. He put power, electric power, in one half where the dogs were. And of course, the dogs learned to jump over to the side, which has no power in it. And he did it for some time, and they snap it up really, really fast. Of course, they learned to jump over to the place where it didn't hurt to be. Then he put electricity in the whole cage. So it didn't matter what the dogs did. Wherever they jump, they were hurt. And after a while, all the dogs just lay down and didn't move. And that state of mind in those dogs he called real hopelessness. It doesn't matter anymore what I did. And that was what I felt, because I tried so hard to stop the life I was living the last years. I can count all the times I have put away all my needles and all bags, and it's never more, and I don't want to live this life. And I'm usually, it took me about 15 or 20 minutes to have the needle in my arm again. My recovery started actually with another person's 12 step. It wasn't my sponsor or anything. It was a speech. I was then in a treatment center, which was 12-step based. And I had been there. I was very paranoid still. I was totally 100% sure that this treatment center just was a cover-up. And the whole point with this treatment center was to investigate what I knew about the murder of the prime minister in Sweden. So I kept my mouth shut all the time and just nodded I wasn't too fit. One day at this treatment center, a former policeman, an alcoholic, told his story. And this is so weird. This guy had been police all his grown-up life. And you couldn't find a person more different from me and the life I have lived. And when he was telling me about his first step, he was found by his colleagues in an apartment with nothing in it except a mattress and bottles of whiskey everywhere, naked on the floor. And when he told me that, I could identify to 100% the feeling he had of shame and I think that was the first time someone actually, you remember the dogs I told you about, they actually healed some of these dogs, and they healed them by backing it up. They had electricity in one part of the cage, and they dragged the dogs over. Some of them never recovered. But some of them did. And to me, that was the first time someone dragged me over to the place where I at least could feel hope that I didn't have to live the life I was. My first step is a simple acceptance of the fact that it doesn't matter what I do anymore, it doesn't matter what I dream, what my thoughts are, I'm going to die from this. After that speaker's day, I did this program to the best of my ability. I have sponsees that makes way better four steps than I did. But I did my best, and I did it to 100%. I was down on my knees and prayed, which I think all drug addicts actually has prayed sometimes. Who hasn't been in jail and don't know if they're going to let you out, or you're going to have 5 years in jail or 10 years in jail, and we go down and pray, please, 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 just release me from here, and I promise you I'm never going to do anything like this. So it actually wasn't too hard. I made a fourth step. I made my lists of resentments and my fear, and I shared this with this man. And I started my ninth step. I called my son. I had a son which I haven't met. And I had some other really urgent guilt feelings about stuff. And I made it. And only a few days after this, I had the strongest experience I ever had. It's really hard to explain, but some of you probably have gone through this. I dreamed differently. My thoughts was completely differently. I looked upon the world differently. And I'm so grateful that I got this message at this time. Because later on, I moved back to Stockholm, where I come from, and I was going in a fellowship. It was no program, whatever. And you know, even if we have one spiritual experience, we tend to fall asleep again. We do that. We work like that. And when you ask people, no one had even tried to do the program. It was a lot about, I don't know, all crap I heard those years. It was about finding your inner child, and people was in meetings actually with this, you know, those bears where you have as a child. They actually sat on meetings with those bears and took care of the. And I had a few years where I can see from now where I actually felt more and more ill for every day that went. In 95, I was in a shape. I have, probably you know what it is. I had hepatitis C. Yeah, you know. And I had started my first treatment. I actually went through 5 years of interferon treatments in my recovery. And I really felt that I need something that works. And it wasn't found in these meetings. And by accident, or whatever you want to call it, a friend of mine turned up with a set of cassette tapes. And it took me about 2 weeks to even start to listen to him. And it was two guys from America. And their name was Hugh McHugh and Charlie Parker. And they made something that was called the Big Book Study. And to me, it was like, this is what I need. And actually, this occasion was the start to this fellowship. I don't know how many copies of those tapes. 200 copies. And a lot of people recovered. We were back then an NA meeting, but all of us were drug addicts that had recovered from the Big Book. And we had a Big Book on the table. And I don't want to grow any resentment towards anything, but I just tell you my experience. They actually sent out spies to check if we had the Big Book or the basic text. And that resulted in that I got a Big Book from United States, which is meant for people that can't see properly. It's very, very big. It's like this with letters that are this size. And that one we had on the table. What happened in that group was we listened to these tapes. We actually did what they told us to do. All made their fourth step, they made their fifth step, they made their sixth step, they made their seventh step. And after about 6 months, we had like 25 or 30 real heavy drug addicts and criminals that were making amends. I mean, people that have lived by criminality for 30 years, walking around in Stockholm with cakes and flowers to people they have made burglaries. It was a miracle that happened. It was so inspiring. So there is different ways in this. You can get very, you know, there are people that can quote Big Book backwards and forwards, and it wasn't really like this. We just did this program, and a lot of good stuff happened to people. When we voted, in 96, I wrote, we had plans to start another fellowship that also works the Big Book. The problem we had that was Their first step and the name of their fellowship didn't really fit in Sweden. We have no cocaine. Almost no one uses cocaine. Only 5 minutes to go. We discussed this, and I wrote the AA World Service Office, and we got permission to start a whole new fellowship. And it was actually quite scary. And after a while, a new group popped up, and but the atmosphere in this group, I can tell you, when we voted about starting this fellowship and leave the fellowship we were in, there were 21 people in the room. And all of those was really heavy drug addicts. 17 is still in recovery, and this was 97. It's a very, very great recovery. This program can really make miracles with people. And I was listening to Sana, and I really can identify with some of the earlier speakers that feelings are not the issue. It's spirituality that's the issue. If you want to base your recovery on feelings, you're doomed to fail. It's the truth that will help us to recover, not the feelings. My feelings is more or less always wrong. And so on. I will stop now, but if you want to ask me something about the early days or whatever happened, and so you just go ahead. I hope you got something out of this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And now I will hand you over to Erica, who has been invited to share for us today. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Erica. I'm an alcoholic and drug addict.
Hello.
Thank you for asking us to come here. It's so nice to be here with you guys, and thanks for all the previous shares, and thanks to everybody who's doing service here today. And thank you, Joachim. It's funny because when I came the first time to DA, after a couple of meetings, Joachim was sitting there, and for me he was like God, because I saw him on videos in the rehab center. He was like, oh! But he's not anymore, though. I'm going to just talk quite quickly about my previous life. I started drinking when I was like 14, 15. And it was like finding home immediately. From the first time I drank, I couldn't stop. And I never drink beer or something like that light. I always drink vodka or the stronger stuff. When I was 16, I was sent to a boarding school in France, and I found cannabis. And that I used every day until I stopped. When I was around, and I must say that a couple of times during the early days, I had quite a lot of fun with alcohol and drugs. I did, but quite fast, when I was around 20, 21, it was only humiliating. A lot of stuff happened that it was, I crashed quite quickly. When I was in my 20s, I found speed as well, and I didn't see myself as a, I took that because I got so drunk when I was drinking. So I took speed to not get that drunk. It was like medicine. But the thing is, when I was awake for 4 or 5 days, it didn't matter. I got my blackouts anyway. And I woke up with guys that I don't know the name of in my bed, and I did all these humiliating things. I stole booze and money from my parents. I stole drugs from my brother. I humiliated all my friends. I mean, that's how it was when I was drinking and taking drugs. I took everything people offered me, and I often, I'll have two, and then I ask what it is. I'm not that interested in what it is. Just give it to me, and I hope that it will, have an effect. And I was working quite hard between in my 30s. I was working 7 years in a TV production company, and I had great responsibility. And so my days were, I got speed. I was on speed daytime, and then nighttime I smoked and I had alcohol. And it just went faster and faster. I was working like 17, 18 hours a day, and I also weighed like 45 kilos or something like that. And I couldn't have one working relationship, not with friends, not with boyfriends, not with my family. Nothing worked. I remember when I was 21, I think, I was moving to my own apartment, and my biggest fear was like, how am I going to find home, my home, when I'm that drunk? Because I was always in a blackout, but I always woke up outside the door, you know, that address. So that was my biggest fear. Not that maybe I shouldn't drink that much, you know. No, how will I find my apartment? I never saw that I was my own problem. Everybody else was idiots, you know. My boyfriends were idiots, my family was idiots. Everybody was doing stuff to me that made everything happen. I can't remember all the hundreds of times I've been on a 3-4 day party. I wake up in the morning sweating with the fear and agony and just, you know, I'm never going to be this drunk ever again, you know. I want to move to the other side of the world, you know, because I'm so shameful. And 2 days later, I'm sitting in the bar again and I think maybe I'm going to get another result tonight. And it just continued. I decided to, because my biggest problem was my work. That was I saw then. I worked too much, like it was too much at work. So I moved to the Philippines to become a diving instructor, and that was like a small dream I had for many, many years, that if I can live on the beach, I can have my margarita, I'm going to be happy, I'm going to meet a guy, you know, all of that. So I moved there, and after 2 months, I had the blackout, of course. I didn't have the speed, so it was like I was 18 again, and drinking 7 days a week, and my last 6 months, I had like a whole bottle of rum every evening. I actually worked at daytime with diving and diving instructing, and then at night, I was drinking one bottle of rum, and it was horrible. It was so humiliating. I had sex, you know, with tourists down with their wives. It was really not nice. I just, you know, one day I was sitting on the beach and I just, you know, I just want to die. I just want to end this now. I was planning for my deepest dive ever and never come up. And something struck me. My dad had killed himself two years before that. And a couple of years before, I met a guy I was working with in this TV production company that told me that he's been in AA for 10 years. And, you know, there is a solution. He was the only one that saw that something was wrong with me at work. And he asked me, you know, how are you drinking? Oh, you know, my mom is an alcoholic, you know. That's what I was want to talk about. And he said, yeah, but how are you drinking? Well, you know, I get blackouts every time I drink. And I thought everybody had that. I didn't get it, that I had a problem. And he just looks at me and he said, you want me to be honest? Yeah, you're an alcoholic. And I was 26. I just laughed at him. I just, what? An alcoholic is, you know, the guy 60 with a red nose. I didn't understand. But he came to me in my mind when I was sitting on this beach, you know. There is a solution. I just decided to pack my bags and come back to Sweden and just ask for help. And that's what I did. I went to rehab, a 12-step rehab place for a couple of months, and they forced me to go to meetings, and I went to meetings for a couple of weeks and every day. And what I heard in these meetings was that take it easy, one step a year, take what you want, leave the rest. I didn't understand, you know. My biggest fear when I went to these meetings was that somebody I knew would come in the room, you know, because I was so shameful. I've done so many bad things out there with people. And, of course, one evening, this guy steps into the room, and last time I saw him was 3 years before, and he was hanging. I was throwing him out of my apartment 3 in the morning, you know. He was hanging in my hallway. And he steps in the room, and I was just, no, this is not true. Oh! And he just, when the meeting ended, he just grabbed me and he said, I want to have a coffee with you. And he made a nine step with me. I didn't realize that, of course. And he said, listen, I want to take you to other meetings. Okay. So he took me to my first DA meeting after I had like, I think I had like 1 month sober or something. And it was quite a shock because I was not used to the words you were using, you know, in this meeting. And it was, what I got there, I got hope there when I came to DA. DA was founded 3 years before I got sober. And it was like, really like, do the steps or die, you know, get a sponsor, go to meetings, do service. It was like, whoa! And for the first time, I heard that we have a common problem, but we have a absolutely common solution, you know, and that's in the big book. You have the recipe here, you know, and we read it in every meeting. I didn't hear that my first month. It went in here and out there. What, am I going to do something? I thought, you know, my therapist was going to do me, you know, do the job for me. And that's so typical, you know, an addict. I don't want to do the work. I want you to do the work for me. And I very quickly, I had to get a sponsor because that's what you do. So I got a sponsor and I start working the steps quite fast. And she actually just ordered me to do service. And I've done that since. And I've been sober and for over 11 years now. And I never stopped doing service. I know that's a big part of my recovery. To do something for others without expecting to get anything back. I've never done that in my whole life. If I do something for you, I want surely something back. That's how I lived my life. And I heard about that. My biggest issue when I came to DA was that all the talk about God. That was my biggest issue. I don't know how many times, you know, sitting there drunk 4 in the morning, I just puked on the religious people, you know. I'm so happy that I got the message in DA that this is not religious, this is spiritual. You can find your own God. And that really saved me, because it was like I was on the edge of, you know, leaving because I couldn't cope with it. I couldn't say the word God. Today I can, because I have my own power, a higher power. And when I was writing in my fourth step, which I really didn't want to do, I didn't understand, why do I need to put all the crap down? Can't I just forget that, you know, and start a new life? And when I was writing all this, I called my sponsor and I said, listen, I don't want to do this anymore because, you know, the third step, I haven't done that. I can't put my life and my thoughts and everything in the hands of the God. What is God? You know, I can't do this. And I'm so glad that she just told me that, Erica, see the third step, that you take a decision to do the other steps. And that's what I did. So I just, you know, I'm going to take that crap later. I prayed, but I didn't pray to God. I prayed to something else. And it was when I did my fifth step with my sponsor, and I had wrote something, you know, the most shameful stuff, very, very small letters so she couldn't read it from the other side, you know, and I said, I put it down, you know, but I'm not going to tell her. And of course I did. And that's when I found my higher power. That's what was in the fifth step. Then it came to me that there is something bigger than me. And that was a big relief for me. And then, of course, I continued with my steps. And I often talk about step 8 and 9 because step 4 and 5 is really, really critical to do the inventory and get rid of all the crap and see the truth, you know, to separate the lie from the truth. And then 6, 7. And then it's so important, at least for me, to start doing 8, 9 because that's when stuff is happening. It really starts happening things. And I remember the first person I was doing amends to, I was so terrified. I was so scared. I was sweating. I was, you know, because I was expecting, you know, that she was going to hate me and scream at me. And, you know, but it was so nice. When I went out of there, I was like 1 ton, you know, from my shoulders. It was amazing. And, of course, I have my family that I do amends, but that's ongoing all the time, of course. I do pick up the phone when my mom calls me every time, you know. I do that. I have dinner with her. I do stuff. My brother, I have another brother, he's 1 year older, he's unfortunately still on drugs and alcohol. So, and that's one thing when I came into the program, I understood that I had to change my life. I can't see my friends anymore that's doing a lot of drugs. And that my brother was one of them. And I see him once a while, and he's come to me in a couple of meetings, but he doesn't want it. He doesn't want it. I've given him a big book, and that's how it is. My life completely changed. I got new values, new moral thoughts. I got, and I can still wake up some mornings and wonder, how did this happen? I remember very well the first meeting I went to, and somebody had like 6 years of sobriety, and I was, fuck, what a boring life. I don't want that. No, I didn't understand. How can you live 6 years without having anything? Can't I just have a little one? I didn't get that. I have a wonderful life today. I don't want the crap. And it's really what helped me as well was one day at a time. When I came, I couldn't say I'm never going to take a drug again because I can't cope with that. I just need to take one day at a time. And one day at a time, 1 month, and now it's 11 years. And I don't know how, I just know that I do this, I do the program, and I still look at my, because I'm not perfect, somebody else said that, I'm far from perfect. And I do crazy, I can do crazy things at work, and I have to pick up the phone and apologize, but I do that now. I couldn't never do that before. I could never apologize to anyone before. I just want to tell you as well, when I had like 1 year and 8 months in recovery, I was in the middle of my ninth step. I got breast cancer. Of course, it was a big shock. And a lot of people told me, oh, that's so, it happened to you. You're sober now and so on. You know? And I didn't need that. I don't need that. I don't need people to feel sorry for me. So my sponsor told me I wrote like big lists of everything I was grateful for every evening, everything that I had. And that's how I turned it, but not once. And I got chemo, and I lost my hair, and I got this big face. Thanks. And not once I thought that solving this problem is to take a drug. Not once, because I learned to see the difference between a lie and the truth. People still come up to me at meetings sometimes and said, oh, you were too much when you had that cancer stuff. You were sitting there at meetings. You were so thankful, And nobody, dared to say anything about, any crap or something. And that's what my sponsor told me as well, give hope to the group and take the crap with your sponsor. And that's how I live. I don't take the crap to meetings. I take it with my sponsor. And she can really pull me down, immediately. I've sponsored a lot of people, and I still do. And something I've learned from that is that I cannot make anybody sober, ever. I can guide them. I can never give them willingness to do this. I cannot. I've tried. I've really tried. I've tried to put the big book in their head. It doesn't work. But if you want my help, I can guide you. And I can show you the solution, how I did. And that is, I'm so, so thankful that I still do this, that I still pass the message to the newcomer. That's why I'm sitting here. I'm not sitting here talking to you guys that have 10, 15, 20 years. I'm talking to the newcomer, of course. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you.